speech of the deputy president on violence against women and children and domestic violence, it is quite clear that a lot more has to be done in this area of work than what exists now as things stand. We have had our planning meeting as the cluster, not just to align as departments, but to align as a cluster on all the issues that we need to align so that we see one result for each initiative that is undertaken, because previously, well, currently, not previously, we are reporting as departments, and therefore the results do not look like they are well coordinated and well structured when they come out at the end. Our coordination and indicate has improved, but I'll speak to that slightly later in the presentation when it comes to issues of managing sexual offences and sexual violence against women and children. Because even though we believe that at national and provincial level, our coordination is now almost a very well-oiled machine, at local level, we feel we are still lacking very fundamentally, and there's a lot of work that needs to go there. Having dealt with those issues, there are a number of other issues that can be interpreted to arise from the National Development Plan. But our view is that these issues have been there prior to the National Development Plan. Therefore, they are consistent with what the plan is saying. Now, improving access to justice has always been there. It's our responsibility. But the plan does articulate itself to that area of work as well. We just thought we would give a high-level synopsis because in addressing the issues of access. Out of the 90 branch courts identified for conversion into full-service courts, 24 have already been converted. This over a period of time. This initiative is still going to be an ongoing initiative based on the availability of funding. The project to align magisterial districts and municipal boundaries has also been progressing well, with major activities focused on consultation with different stakeholder communities. And that project has really been on the slow side. But towards the end of the year, the very last day of the end of the year, we did the sign off on the project. At least there will be some conversions that are going to happen this year. The country currently has 268 small claims courts in counties, and because there are few that are going to be done this year, with of course an additional 70 places of sitting which didn't exist previously. I think on the 18th this week, which is tomorrow, we are launching the final small claims court for Gauteng. After tomorrow's one, the whole of Gauteng would have a full complement of small claims courts that we had planned, and we are really excited about that. But we are also celebrating many years of existence of the small claims court and many successes that have happened. So this event is intended to achieve that, to thank the commissioners who are giving selflessly of their time to assist communities to realize the resolution of their disputes in a much more speedier and less and in a cost-effective manner. We intend to have one small claim court in each of the 387 magisterial districts, and this work is ongoing. We also take our cue from the JCPS delivery agreement, and we were given a mandate up to and including 2014. We have achieved significantly in some areas in terms of the JCPS cluster and not in other areas of the cluster. And I'll articulate some of the areas where we have not achieved as much as we would have wished to achieve. And one of those areas is we've made progress but we've not achieved is the integration of the criminal justice systems themselves. And you will be surprised of what we will tell you today on that area. Then...
Okay. Sephora,
have been happily surprised.
Oh.
Pleasantly surprised. That's good English. Yes, we have not. But what we are now, the progress that we are making now. Yes. Thank you very much. Okay. Then we move to the issue of the transformation of sailing and services. There is a project currently underway in the department. This project is stimulated by a number of issues. One is stimulated by just the overall performance of the department in advisory services, legal advisory services that we are providing. Overall performance of the department in the court environment, in other words, through our state attorneys and the life function, and how we could enhance that, but also the overall demand of services, of the advisory legal services. As government grows, as South Africa grows, there is a lot more focus that we need to pay into that. And finally, driven obviously by our constitution to ensure that things are done timely, things are done justly, and as a result, we then concluded that we needed to transform the state legal services. One of the areas that we had looked into is not just the transformation in terms of race and gender, which is fundamental, but it's also the transformation of how our businesses are done in this area, but it's also the transformation in relation to how we perceive our responsibilities to be in relation to the work that we do. So the level of training will improve, the level of output will improve in our view as soon as this project has been finalized. One of the key elements of this project involves around the accountability and reporting for the work that happens in the court environment by the state attorney currently. We've worked on that, we've engaged on that, and very soon we will then be finalizing the protocols that will guide that. In addition, we will then amend the State Attorneys Act of 1957 to be able to manage one area, and that area is creating the full accounting responsibility, which in our view should be vested in the Solicitor General, creating and vesting the Office of the Solicitor General with the accounting of performance at court. I'm not talking about the general accounting of that position. Now, what is critical about that is that we need norms and standards. In the same way as we're talking about norms and standards for the judiciary and norms and standards for the prosecution, we need norms and standards for our state legal services, which is your Office of the Chief State, your advisor, your Chief Mitigation Officer, and the State Attorney, and the Family Advocate. Those norms and standards must be there. So amongst other things that had to happen in the past year was for us to just participate some state attorneys that in our view the state attorneys in terms of investment in them, they've received very limited investment in just reinvesting in that region. And so we've had to participate because of course their workload should increase, their capacity has not met that, and it still is not going to match that in the foreseeable future, but at least we have had to improve some elements to enable the business to improve its efficiency going forward. In the context of the promotion of vulnerable groups, there are a number of areas that continue to guide us, which I do not wish to deal with in detail, but I just wanted to recall for the purpose, just to indicate some of the coordination and the work that happens behind the scenes for us to be able to achieve the things that we want to achieve. We are, amongst others, guided by the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and I'm not going to go through each of them. Of course, fundamentally, we are guided by the Constitution, but we are guided by those the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And it's quite critical that we realize that the noise that is currently happening in the system, where there's so much violence against children, there is a convention at an international level, there is the Constitution, there is legislation. So if you are talking only in terms of law and legal instruments, we should not be having the problem that we are having. And therefore, there is a problem, and it's big, and at some point. And the question is, how do we get to the problem fast enough, and how do we turn the problem around? And that's the work that we have been doing. Having said that, I must indicate that the violence against children, or violence generally, but specifically in this case against children, is really a societal issue. It's a lot more things must happen. The criminal justice system is but one element that must work. Our view is that it must work well, and it's not working as well as it should right now, but it could get better. But other elements must work well. We must eliminate drugs as much as possible from our society to ensure that we reduce the crime against women and children. But we are also enjoined by international community to ensure that that happens. The Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, this is one very thorny area in terms of people living with disabilities are still experiencing some discrimination, which is unintended, but is as a consequence of either infrastructure that has not been geared for that, but also as a result of other areas of insensitivity that sometimes do happen. So in this area of work around disabilities, we've done a lot of work both in the materials that we produce as well as in the partnerships that we've entered into to address issues of people living with disabilities. Our core group, our core infrastructure remains very, at least the old infrastructure is still not very good in all respects to areas of disability. And I could perhaps single out the list. I am still not sensitive to most instances, except the newly built cost and some aspects of areas. Thank you. Then the Convention of Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, shortly known as CEDAW. The areas of discrimination against women continue to permeate in our society, and it's an area that sometimes we put the overt discrimination and in some instances not. And our duty and what we've been advocating for is really serious advocacy in terms of sharing information and advocacy work. We do this directly as a department, but we also do this through our partners that we will talk to slightly later on in the document. Then the issue of sexual offences, specifically arising from the legislation. Honourable members would recall that we submitted the National Policy Framework on the Management of Sexual Offences Register, which guides the intersectoral response to and the prevention of sexual violence to Parliament sometime, I think it was last or the other year. It was then withdrawn because the Commission on Gender Equality requested that the document be postponed and be withdrawn and be dealt with in consultation with themselves, which at the time had not been sufficiently done. Subsequent to that process, there were further consultations, not just with the Gender Commission, with much more people, culminating in the document being revised and resubmitted and retabled back in this honorable house. As a consequence of the policy framework, a lot of activities have had to happen between ourselves as the Department of Justice and the sector members. And the sector members would primarily include such social development, basic education, health, NPA, legal aid, and the few other departments who we convene from time to time if the need arises. Now, we are meeting on a quarterly basis as this year, but there are monthly meetings that are happening. So when I was saying that coordination at local level is not happening as much as we wish it to be, it's because of the experience in trying to roll out the sexual offences policy framework. We are realizing that on the ground, when an incident happens, when a violation of that nature happens, people do not come together quickly enough to deal with the issue, so that one will preserve evidence, the matter is investigated and it's processed through a court system. Now, no amount of building of court will solve that problem if the coordination is not that great, and of course the skills associated with that had not matched up to the current need that the country is experiencing. The research in the re-establishment of the dedicated sexual offences court has been completed, and is now being looked at, interrogated internally in the department, just so that we ensure that each of the areas that have been identified, the courts that have been identified, have everything that we say they have, and sit within the communities that they must serve, where the need is high, and so on and so on. But we've devised a criteria against which the court that must be designated as such must meet before they are designated. It doesn't mean work is not ongoing, Chair, and in case work is ongoing as usual, but as soon as these courts are designated, as such, we will then start seeing progress in that area. But having said that, it means that matters must be investigated and must be brought before court. That is the fundamental issue. The prosecutor must be investigated and brought before court. Everything else will then follow because then the court will be in place. With regard to the National Register for Sexual Offences, honourable members would recall that. We had reported and we continue to report that we are securing, we are registering, we are capturing information in the National Register for Sexual Offences on an ongoing basis. We had indicated that one of the biggest problems that we were having was going back and clearing the backlog in terms of getting information. We also reported that we received about 35,000 or thereabouts. Of information from of names of yes information that way from that which we needed to clear for us to be in capturing the system. Did a lot of work behind that. It actually didn't work. After all of that, it didn't work. So we've adopted a slightly different approach to that original approach. SAP has been very cooperative. It's just that the information is sitting all over the place for them to be able to give us information that we call it. What's the right way? Reliable. for us to be, because we can't just capture anything. Mm. Once we capture something, we must be absolutely sure that that name deserves to be there. Otherwise, we're going to create more problems than this. So it's an area that we are moving very cautiously, but it's an area that we are trying to move with speed in terms of complying with legislation in the Assembly. Then on children, I've already dealt with issues on children. I've indicated that we're meeting with the DGs. And of course, the work that is currently underway is really for us to develop a metric that will guide what would be a metric that will guide the establishment of the one-stop child justice centers going forward, because we have been creating them, but we have not had a model until we discovered that we were on one that we had already identified and dedicated to work on. The cost just became way out of control. We thought we were not going to go there. We then had to go back and do the same slightly differently. Work related to the trafficking of children, there's a document that it's not a document, it's a guide, an intersectoral frontline service guide on managing human trafficking and related matters. This guide we developed, we started, I think, during the World Cup, just doing pre-World Cup, anticipating that there was going to be a lot of trafficking that was going to go on this time, and at that time the legislation has not been finalized. We've since formalized this into a guide, into a little booklet that talks to in between the departments and the responsible functionaries, who does what when a certain report happens. And that guide is in place. And we, this year we want to popularize that guide and throughout. And also, of course, with part of this guide is a sub-guide that then deals with what do you do for those victims as well. So the one is inward looking, focusing on the victim, the other is looking at the victims of trafficking. Then the one that attracted a lot of attention last year, which was the assessment of the impact of the decision made in the Constitutional Court and the Supreme Court of Appeal, and I can see the eyes in my way, became very topical last year. It works that is ongoing in procurement process comments. It yielded very negative results for us. We've worked. Okay, maybe no. Let me correct. It didn't yield negative results. It did not give us the exciting results as we had anticipated at the time. So we reworked on that process. We relooked at the document after evaluation. We came to a conclusion that if we had to put it in the market again, we were not likely to get different results because some of the changes that we made were not fundamental. We then, as a result, were able to get a few organizations to start with their work. So that work has started. We must understand this project in the total context of a 20-year review of what has been happening in the country and all of that. So some contribution must come from this project into the 20-year review of a democratic country. Review of the civil justice system. This is one of those projects that has gone really slow. It is not through lack of will necessarily. It's just when the project started, I think it was underestimated the nature of involvement, the level of work, the level of time, the output, the governance around the project. And however, all of those issues have now been bedded down between the minister and the honorable chief justice. The issues of governance, who will lead it, where will it reside, what will the responsibility of the department be, of the whole committee be, and all of that. And so we are now ready to run with this project. So that will also be reflected in our plan. So this, I have re-articulated some of the issues that have been raised by this Honourable House, some of the issues that had arisen but not raised by this Honourable House, but which this Honourable House could have been aware of. I probably would not have done all of them, but for the purposes of the strategy, I thought that was the relevant information that needed to be put in place before we then articulate the strategy. I then move to the second part of the presentation, which is the strategic goal. The first goal, enhance organizational performance on all aspects of administration in line with set standards and meeting and exceeding the needs and aspirations of key stakeholders. I really wish to speak to this goal because honorable members would recall that in our annual report last year, our performance was very low. It was low because we were starting from a very low base in terms of just having to deal with too many issues of an administrative nature, putting our house and getting our house in order and all of that. And that in itself did affect the actual performance because of the time you have to invest in getting the system going. This year, we will continue with that work, but we've also paid particular attention in the area of performance. But performance will still not be where we want it to be, but at least it has improved. And hopefully, when we're reporting, it has improved even better than that. And the idea is that we want to get to a stage where not in all our services at once, but in some of our services, we want to get to a stage where we are saying we are now exceeding expectations. I can indicate, even at the stage where we believe that our performance is still not there, that there are areas where our performance does exceed expectations right now, even as we speak. And we are quite excited about that. That is why we thought consciously we have to start aiming for this, for us to push ourselves. The second goal relates to facilitating the resolution of criminal, civil, and family law disputes by providing accessible, efficient, and quality administrative support to the court. Now, one of the areas where in the past 2 years or so, where the performance has been really, really low, has been in the family advocate environment. And in particular last year. And what we have done through the extension of the civil jurisdiction legislation that was promulgated in August 2010, no, that was promulgated on the 9th of August in 2010. And what has happened is that the expansion of this jurisdiction then gave additional responsibilities which we had not anticipated to the Office of the Family Advocate. In truth, the Family Advocate is seriously wounded right now in terms of responsibilities, and so we've had to reprioritize, we are reprioritizing in order to ensure that we meet the responsibilities of the office. But it's an office that we are very concerned with. And it's not through lack of will or incompetence or anything, it's just sheer volume and numbers and geography that is affecting us. Strategic goal 3, effective and cost-efficient provision of state legal services that anticipate, meet, and assist stakeholder needs and expectations. I have already spoken to state legal services, so I will not elaborate any further. Strategic goal 4, effective coordination of the JCF cluster in the delivery of outcome 3. This is an area that we believe we are doing reasonably well, except for the areas that I will articulate slightly later. Then strategic goal 5, promotion of the constitution and its values. In this area, we a branch constitutional development is already in place. The participation of that branch is moving now at a very good pace. We will be seeing the DPC in what is to spend the future for that branch. We've taken on a few new people to just move and push the advocacy around issues of the constitution, but also then dealing with issues that are resultant from those advocacy programs. Now we want to indicate some of the challenges that we have had, which has resulted in some adjustments to the current plan. During the process of revising the strategic plan and the annual performance plan, we took, amongst other things, the following into consideration. The policy guidance from the Minister and the Deputy Minister, who we are very grateful to because they've really given us guidance, that we can complain about. And the centrality of the public as consumers of our services, that too has been big guide. Available resources, we will speak to that when we come to the budget. Having said that, we really must say that we have been lucky in that there are some areas that Treasury has decided to fund in our business, and we are grateful to that. But certainly, as everyone would understand, funding is not nearly enough for the things that we are obliged to do and required to do in terms of the law. Dedicated focus on improved organizational performance, the needs of our partners to enable them to perform their functions, such as the prosecution, the judiciary, legal aid, the public protector, and the like. Guidance from stakeholders, namely the Auditor General, National Treasury, Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, Portfolio Committee, Public Service Commission, and many more that have really given us guidance and taken their to be upon us. And in this budget cut, I'm not going to stop any kind of thing in our view, and in fact, as expressed by Treasury as well, they have given us an indication that they might come and visit us again and look for savings again. But even as they do that, they have been doing that responsibly, and I must indicate, and in good discussion, and where they have made it possible for us to propose that meeting without kicking and screaming about it. So but it is important to understand that they will come to visit us in not too distant the future. The impact on staff costs as a result of the Department of Public Service Administration's directive on lower levels of our employees. Now, what had happened, our employees at level 4 got a determination from public service, which determination had an impact of increasing their level, improving their level from level 4 to level 5, which I think in general is a very good thing because I mean, we are all faced with very pressurized time financially. But the real impact on our book is calculated to be at plus minus 150 million. But what we've done is we've decided we will phase this in over a period of time. This has resulted in a lot of turmoil in the organization in the past year from this level. There is still a lot of turmoil from different levels that have not been dealt with in the same way. And there is a need to address that. And we understand and we work with PTSA to be able to address that level. But this level was a level that we have a lot of problems on from. And this level is a level that supports our costs and supports our offices in terms of administration. And as a result, it was felt that if this level collapses, then it was a bigger problem. We were grateful that was to PTSA for that decision that we offered. We continue to experience challenges associated with occupational specific discrimination. We've put in place a lot of engagements between ourselves and the Public Service Administration Department. Unfortunately, those at the level between myself and the DG have not really materialized, not through lack of trying, diaries that could not reconcile. The migration of certain functions to the Office of the Chief Justice, I have already alluded to that, so I will not elaborate on that point any further. Safe to say, it will affect our performance, it will affect our targets, we will have to, as almost a matter of certainty, then have to approach this Honourable House once that process has happened, just to indicate what exact changes they are going to do. The above inflation increase in municipal rates and taxes and electricity costs will continue to have negative impact on the limited budget allocation that we have. You will see in the budget presentation the difference. We've been showing this difference consistently in this Honourable House. You will see this, and you will then realize, in part, why on the one level we are not able to meet our 30-day payment to suppliers. It's in part, not all of it, but in part, we owe that problem to this disjuncture between the increases and what we get in the allocation for these areas of work. And of course, we are dependent on our colleagues on capital infrastructure, and that I need not say more. Then we move to just dealing very briefly with the budget cut that we have been indicating. We got a very different budget. Perhaps let's start by saying we got a very different budget. We are very grateful for that. We had an increase, which was an additional allocation of 135 million. We however, are still going to experience some budget cuts, and those budget cuts have been calculated in the total 610 million. Now, I really would like to call here and try and bring the honourable members to the picture. you'd recall that at a particular point in time last year, we kept saying there was a 680 million budget, or whatever, the 600 million budget cut. And when we said, when you look at our accrual, there is some level of relationship between that and the accrual. And what we are saying is that for as long as there are budget cuts, these budget cuts do have an impact in how we manage our cash flow, and therefore at some level does result in some level of performance. And I think it's just a matter that we need to keep at the back of our minds. Our planning this year is slightly better. Having said what I've just said, National Treasury did give us an information towards the last 2 days of the financial year, because we had also been showing them the impact in our books and meeting with them regularly. And colleagues have been very, very kind in that department. We really want to thank. They did give us this information towards the end of the year of plus minus 200 million or thereabouts, which enabled us to be able to reduce our accruals. And therefore, even though we still look very bad on the day-to-day payments and but at least we are going to be recording progress as a result of this intervention. Of course, we will focus on the capabilities that we are able to put in place to improve access to justice. We deal with these under Program 2. Then infrastructure support for the government and our stakeholders, especially the lower courts. The number of issues in the North Coast, infrastructurally speaking, as well as with our partners in the justice sector. Enhancing capacity of state legal services is also one of the areas that would require a lot of funding if we really want to turn the image of the state legal services of government around. And they are not worried about that. Of course, there are initiatives that do not need money, but others will certainly need money. Third party funds, it will need investment, but it's a slightly different investment compared to the investment that we are all working towards when we are talking about it. So what we are going to need is much more reduced, but it's now going to be the system that we want to put in place to sustain the gains that we have made. Later in the presentation, we will be showing that we have targeted to reach 300 costs, and we surpassed that number to 310 costs that are now being paid via EFT. Our IT and personnel, as well as risk management, IT personnel and as well as risk management, I must indicate that the investment that we received of 100 million in 2011 has gone into this process. We've done a lot of work in terms of developing people in this area, appointing people, a lot of vacancies in this area, but also in addition, we've invested in systems as well as in policy development around this area. One of the areas in our audit action plan, remember the red that the Auditor General gave us, and one of the areas was that we didn't have a policy framework on managing IT services, and the policy framework was dependent on the PSA finalizing theirs. They have to finalize theirs, and as soon as they finalized theirs, we were able to finalize ours, and it was approved before the end of the financial year. So we are hoping the Auditor General will look at them favorably, and of course, a lot of work that we presented to the Auditor General in this area. So we are hoping for an improved audit outcome in this area, and I hope they do this one. We'll come to the qualified. We are coming to it. Right, now we come to administration. The purpose has not changed. It still remains to manage the department, develop policies and strategies for efficient administration of justice, and to provide centralized support services. Our overview is that we want to run a better administration to achieve unqualified audits. We want to fight fraud and corruption in our environment. We want to improve safety and security of our service points. that's why security then becomes a big issue because it's grossly underfunded at this stage. We want to implement key ICT projects and we will give visibility of what those ICT projects are going to be. We want to invest in our people. In the past 2 years, we've really been chasing everything, but our people, the focused investment on our people. We were training on this and that, and we want to start training in a focused manner, developmentally, so that people are able to grow as well in the organization and start creating career pathing supported by appropriate training. Improving the coordination of JCPS cluster and then finalization of truth and reconciliation commission work and implementing the service charter and related projects. The first program, project, relates to the increased compliance with prescripts for good governance. One of the three key objectives of the department is to achieve a no-audit qualification by 2012, 2015, and sustain it through the subsequent years. Now, at this stage, I should say, now that the question has been asked, that it is our conviction as a department, and my personal conviction as the founding officer, that we are still working flat out towards the target, and we are still wanting to achieve an unqualified audit by the end of the financial year, which means when we submit the report because the financial year has ended. We've done a lot of work with the Auditor General. We've done a lot of work in our own system outside the processes of the Auditor General. We've engaged at all levels of the organization. We've addressed our controls and identified from the Auditor General. Now, as you address others start creeping in, and of course, it's an ongoing work, maintenance work, as we must be able to say. In our view, as we sit here today, we can't say absolutely we think we are going to get an unqualified audit. But we are saying, at this stage, based on everything that we know, it would be very disappointing not to get it. That's what I want to say. And so we think we'll get it. Of course, I'm not the auditor. If I was, we would get it for sure.
Well done. Yes, well done.
So we have audit action plans. We are being monitored by a very active audit committee, and I have to qualify what I mean. Our audit committee that we have is very knowledgeable on issues of audit. We now have auditors who are invested in wanting us to do the right thing. They are guiding us correctly, they are keeping this in privacy. We are addressing some of the issues, they are concerns, they are raising concerns which we believe are genuine concerns, and we are working very, very well with them. And we are really, really, very honored to have the team and so we've received a lot of guidance in the past few months since the team came together as the audit committee for the year. But also, even on areas of performance information, we've worked quite aggressively in the past year, and starting in 2011, to work on performance information to enable our performance indicators to improve. Honorable members would recall that the reason why our performance information was rated so low was that in our offices throughout the country, we did not have supporting information all the time, or we had misplaced and all of that. So this year we put in a lot of emphasis in getting files checked and everything, and we did samples, we did acid tests per course that each one of us visited at some point or the other, just to ensure that people understand what it is at the lowest levels of the organization, all the way up to where we are ourselves. So we are very conscious, and we believe that this should not be a big problem this year. Certainly, the audit the auditors are always in our face, and they are always raising some of the concerns that they believe we still have to prove. And it's the jury still out on us, but we believe we are doing enough to get what we are looking for. Increased compliance with prescripts for good governance. This is one area where we, honourable members, will respond, but there's something we have that decision that we have to make to you because of non-compliance with the prescript in the procurement environment. We soon sorted that out and put into place new systems, so we are happy with that in the procurement space. However, there remain challenges in the debt certifying environment and because one of the systems, but now it's a different problem than the problem we experienced 3, 4, 5 years ago, and also in broad terms, in just increasing maintenance services. There's a full slide that deals with maintenance services at different levels of the organization. And then we are strengthening capacity on an ongoing basis in terms of skills to manage our books, because we believe it is important to do this going forward. We also established a compliance unit because we were very worried that there were things that were just falling into the cracks, and that unit is operational and resident in the office of the chief financial, the chief operations officer, and it was located there so that it could support the strategy unit in terms of identifying areas where the strategy unit would focus on. In the fight against fraud and corruption that happens in our own department, the number of
who needs a comfort break? Is it a DJ or the anything?
I think all of us. We could do with a complete break, actually. Oh, man. I have been so ill, and my boss said to me, come in for a short meeting for an hour this morning. When I came in this morning, he said, I'll put you on another 4-hour one from 4 till 8 tonight. Bye. Bemoaning what they're doing to me at PMG.
Sorry?
Bemoaning what they're doing to me at PMG. No, I've been ill. So Rashad said, oh, yeah, I'd come in for a short meeting, just an hour today. But I ended up with 3 meetings. He's taken one of them away from me again, thank goodness. How are you doing, Nick? Are you staying here?
When?
Staying in this meeting, or are you buzzing around elsewhere?
I'm just trying to work out whether they're going to mention.
Who's they going to mention?
Come again.
You mean the progress on them? Doubt it. Hi. No, this is just justice. Just justice. They're doing the strategic plan and they're carrying until 4 o'clock. It's gone to
M514. All right.
I haven't seen you around ages, mate. You still living in Tambourg? Oh, okay. Just haven't bumped into you. Sorry?
5 years.
Is that a long time for you to stay in one place?
No.
Oh, don't you own it? Oh.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. No, we went through a stage where we were moving every 6 months, you know. So that was absolutely hard. But I mean, we've been in our place for 20 odd years now.
Yeah.
But we bought a long time ago. Can't afford to sell because we can't afford to move anywhere else.
Actually, there was one up in Highcamp. You know Highcamp?
Yeah. Lots of wind. I see from experience, bitter experience, yeah.
Your garden went into the neighbours, the whole garden.
My liver's absolutely ill. I mean, we've had our creepers blown down. We lost our roof earlier on this year. A chunk of the roof just blew off. Fortunately, missed the car that was parked below. But a huge stress, you know.
It just comes around the corner then.
It actually lifted because the roof looks like that with a going like that, and if the wind gets in there, it lifts the whole thing off. So now we're having the hassles, of course, because the guys have been back 3 times to try to fix it, and we're still getting water running down the walls, which we've never had before. Oh, then it's asbestos. Oh, no, sure. Well, this was asbestos that they had specially made to fit the profile, and I don't think they had it made very well, quite frankly. But anyway, we shall continue with our nice little water feature down the wall.
How's PMG, all right?
Yeah, quite a lot.
Yeah.
I think there's only one or so that they get locally, but the rest is sort of raised foundation and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You heard about it, also.
Yeah.
Good thing we pulled out there. Yeah, the sort of updates on bills and stuff. Do they also run courses like Jutta and Butterworth? Does Savinage also do RBMP to the legal education?
They do their own training courses.
Internally or externally?
Use the methodologies.
Oh, okay, no, only that. No, because Jutta and Butterworth have gone into doing the things that were sort of in competition when I was at UCT to doing that. Continuing legal education was a big topic.
Yeah.
You know, they started specifically on the labour and constitutional stuff that tied in with their publishing.
No,
but then they've gone much broader than that.
No, but we just got a new labour product recently, which is all the bargaining council agreements, and that is all wrong.
Oh.
So they're bringing new products.
Oh, okay. Coffee up there. Fresh coffee, was it all the old stuff?
I didn't take care. Oh, you want?
Let's go and check.
Thank you.
anything about the quality of the person and the conduct and the propensity that the person might might have. But this problem is not just unique to us as the Department of Justice. It's also a problem that we are experiencing in the cluster. Remember, you recall that we said as the JCPS cluster, we had specifically planned and targeted to have concluded the vetting of all supply chain management officials in government. Period X, and that period has come and gone, and we have not been able to achieve that, even though some vetting has happened. So it's a bigger problem. It is being addressed at the cluster level, but it's also being addressed at the departmental level. And we should start seeing improvement because we then have access to the system for vetting, and that system is now helping us to get going on that.
Stop if I'm wrong. I mean, obviously we're going to be asking questions, but this specific fact that the DG may be able to deal with in one go. So, for example, what I wanted to ask, and then tell me whether it can be asked, if you should answer it now or I should wait. But last year, you said there was a baseline of 43% of vetting, and for the 2012-13 year, 60% of all outstanding senior managers, making up 68% of all senior managers, outstanding senior managers were planned. Now, this year, there's no figures. Do you want to hold that rather? Okay, all right. So, DG, you can continue.
All right, thank you. So the information on vetting is on page 28 of the slide. And of course, we will provide a response to the question of the honorable member. Thank you. Then on forensic investigations as well, issues of corruption, fraud, theft, and in some instances, administration. We've received, as an example, 133 cases for investigation, and of those, we've finalized already 102 cases for the period commencing on the 1st of April 2012, closing on the 31st of March 2013, and that amounts to 77%. Now, the reason why we are just trying to illustrate this is that the numbers are coming in, the investigations are happening, and after those investigations, there is still a process that must happen, which is the actual disciplinary processes that must in fact take place. So if just illustratively, again, if you think the opening balance for all cases at the 1st of April 2012 was 41, and all old cases were finalized by the 31st of March 2013, and that's the improvement that we are beginning to see because we're struggling to get cases finalized. And for the 2013-2014 financial year, we are now targeting to finalize 60% of new cases and then 70% of old cases. And that's because we've paid particular attention to those cases that have been in the system for a very long time. We've paid particular attention to suspensions that have been prolonged suspensions and all of those, especially at senior management level. And we've made decent progress in this area. On information technology, for our strategy to succeed, we need a very safe but very technical, very strategic information communication technology to be able to deliver in almost in real time, as you know. There was investment that was made of 100 million, 115 allocated towards the ICT infrastructure for 2013-2014 and 2014-2015, respectively. Through the budget review process and the recommendations, we got this money. We then went into a full plan to look at what we needed to do with it, and there is a full plan that then addresses how we're going to spend the money and what are we going to yield as a result. And it's also part of this presentation, but we also have a specific plan that is also a standalone plan, which is the plan that I am using. It must also be indicated still under paragraph C that even though we received 100 million and 115 million, our needs are not there. Our needs are slightly, well, actually, a lot higher than that. However, the good thing about receiving this money is that it has enabled us to go back and fix the big ticket issue, which, if we do not fix, whatever we build on the surface is not going to last. And we invested, therefore, in that way. And we've also improved our governance in this area just so that the investment that we make is consistent with the broader and the long-term strategy for the department, so that we do not keep changing infrastructure, ICT infrastructure, as we need to do. Three key software development projects were identified over the NCES period. In 2013-2014 financial year, the department has planned the following ICMS projects. One is in ICMS civil in lower court, and the reason why we are looking at civil is that in all fairness, we have not paid as much attention to the civil work of the court as much as we have in the criminal justice system, and it's an area that we need to invest in because it unlocks the economy, it unlocks disputes and all of those things, and it's important that we start investing and start measuring our successes even on civil work. ICMS Masters for the deceased estate system, this work is also planned, and in the Masters environment, systems are working slightly better than throughout the organization, and that's because of the specific focus that we've paid over a 3-4 year period in just without failing. We've been saying, for anything that is going to be new in the ISN environment, we're going to tighten the master's office and we're going to ensure that it works. And so the results that we are beginning to see are as a result of that. It doesn't mean master's the world has problems, but in so far as ICT infrastructure is concerned, we are pleased about where this area of work is. On the third-party fund system, members would recall that after moving away from the PPP system, we decided to continue with JDAS at that point whilst we are figuring out what system is affordable and is small and will address our needs, and we are not buying things that we are not necessarily going to need. And the 10 specifications, the specifications have been worked on and so that we can then put into place a system that is sustainable, that will take us into the future. It's important that we do that because it's not just TTS insofar as maintenance is concerned that we are dealing with, but we are also dealing with other money. State attorney bonds and the like are also monies that are TTS monies, and we want a system that will accommodate all of that. The offsite storage project has been deployed in certain courts, and just for the benefit of members, offsite storage is this project that resulted in the Johannesburg letter that was read very kindly in this honourable house. So, but we are beginning to see good progress in this project. In fact, some 2 weeks or so ago, we went to see not a live demonstration, but a demonstration of how the thing works in practice, and it's just here in the Western State High Court. Now, it is working, and it's working very well there. And what we are doing is we are using that as a model to perfect the balance of the 7 which are working but are not still working as well as they should, so that they work as well as the 7. And after this, it will then be all systems go for the balance of the records. There is work that is already happening in other courts to start capturing and all of that, but in terms of project perfection or closure, we want to close these to a point where they match the standard of the one that we want to use as a model. This has had a lot of value for us. The first value is documents, of course, are now there in the system for a particular period. And then the second issue is that so we're not likely to lose those documents. And if there's a system shutdown, we have risk mitigating factors to ensure that those documents are not lost. If you then move to the next slide, that talks to information and communication technology. When I said we had to invest in big ticket things, one of those are servers. There was a question that was raised last year about servers in Bloemfontein and everywhere else and all of that. This project is intended to address just that, to replace all out of warranty servers. And this honorable house has ought to be informed, because this information might come out at some point in the future and it might seem as if we didn't disclose it to the world. There was a time where we really literally operated either on out of warranty infrastructure in some elements and close to out of warranty infrastructure in others. And that's because we just didn't have resources. And that's what we had to go and fix with the original Hans-Belgian to fix the warranties and all of those on the infrastructure that was still working and on the infrastructure that was not working then to replace some of that. And so this project that is itemized here is what we are going to push throughout the organization for 2013-2014 financial year so that we are able to improve our operations and our performance. This project, the ICNS that we are talking about here, is very different to the criminal justice system integration, which I will talk about later when I get to it. So it's not the same thing. This is an internal project that is looking at the Department of Justice and our functional areas as the department. But we then still have to link to the transversal hub of the integrated criminal justice system. Human resources. Under human resources, we cover a few issues. One of them is dealing with vacancies. In fact, in terms of the target we have set for ourselves, we said we wanted to achieve a minimum of 10% vacancy rate in the department, and we have achieved that target for the year. However, having said that, there are still issues in the senior management level, and it's not everywhere in senior management level. It's at executive management level. In other words, it's at ex-collector. And it is not through lack of trying. It's advertising, interviewing, and people accepting and declining. And so we've had a bit of those. We've had one of those in the recent month. In fact, this month. And so we are going through that process again. And that's the time. But I must just give comfort to this honourable committee that our minister supported primarily by Minister of State Security and our Deputy Minister and myself has been at work in the past few months interviewing. The fact that we still don't have Tripoli is therefore not as a result of lack of effort. We just have to explore and keep doing it until we get there. In light of the fact that we are experiencing budget cuts in part, and these budget cuts are not necessarily in the area of recruitment of staff, but has a direct impact on the area of the recruitment of staff. Some of our offices countrywide they no longer have space for additional people. And because they don't have space for additional people, it means even if you do have money in the budget for personnel, it wouldn't make sense to appoint new personnel unless you find accommodation, which you can't afford to find because you do not have a budget for accommodation. So we said, to be fair to ourselves and to be fair to our own employees, it's not going to make sense to keep wanting to bring on new people when they do not have space to be. I must just share this with the Conservative House that I have I am summoned to be appearing in the Bloemfontein Court in my capacity as the not necessarily happen, but they do have an old infrastructure. It requires serious renovation and revamping it in the family advocate context. The roof leaks like crazy when it rains and all of those things. And so, of course, there are two outcomes for me personally. The first one is, if I can convince the prosecutor, it would mean that I would have a criminal record at the end of it, which is very bad. But what is even worse is that if we can fix that problem, it is quite possible that the Department of Labor may not take kindly, and we don't know what they would do, and we don't want to know what they would do if that situation is not addressed. But we are working on it. It's failure to produce the electricity online certificate. Unless you, for all our buildings, we must have electricity compliance, just like a house if you're selling, you have to produce something. Because in the absence of that, it means your infrastructure is not safe for habilitation by whoever must habilitate it. And that's really important. We've had nemesis with some of our offices being closed because of the infrastructure. So it's one of those things that we're dealing with, but good lawyer we do have. But I think this, even as we have lawyers, the fundamental issue is to address this. Yes, but it is infrastructure is a public works issue, especially wiring, electrification, and all those things. Well, you see, in law, in terms of the Occupational Health and Safety Act, it's an employer who, unfortunately, in this case, happens to be myself, must be fit and proper. We don't want to go there. But anyway, we're dealing with it. I was just sharing it as part of just illustrating the point that so if an eventuality that we do not hope for were to happen in that office, it means we now have to figure out where to put the family advocate office, and that's the issue. I don't want to go that far in thought, but it allows for a penalty. And all of us are experiencing them, so I'm not taking it personal, but it's just one of those things that sometimes the effect of these things can really be very wide-ranging. On misconduct cases, I had already indicated some level of progress there. At the end of February 21st, 291 misconduct cases were finalized, while 171 were not finalized. So it was a bigger number that we are not able to finalize in this particular case. Finalized cases, however, improved dramatically from last year, and even though we still are not going to meet the target at the end of the financial year, but they improved quite significantly, and we're grateful for that. But this is also an area that Public Service Administration has realized that throughout government, we are having issues with, the minister announced just the other day that they will centralize some of the issues around Connor. But we would wish to do ours outside the process and satisfy ourselves that we can do it without having to seek additional help, if possible. About 176 cases were finalized, and these resulted either in dismissals, final warnings, and just extension for some expenses. And then for the 2013-2014 financial year, we are targeting 55% finalization rate, and there's a reason why we are targeting a lower number than what we have been able to achieve. For us to be doing these cases, it means a lot of travel in between offices, and therefore a lot of SMCs and a lot of other things for us to be able to perform in terms of this. So when we are managing this, I think our target must also be cognizant of that. We have had a lot of grievances in the past year or so, and at the end of February 2013, 236 cases had been finalized, while 266 were not finalized. So you see in this case that in February we had not achieved our target. In fact, we fell below the 50% mark. We are still trying to see if the match numbers will not push us to the 50% mark. But it's one of those things, and I might want to indicate why we had so many grievances in most instances. Most grievances related to performance evaluations and the implementation of previous decisions, either on OSD or on other determinations of that sort that we could not afford to implement. And so with the dispensation that happened on the level 4 to 5, we are going to see this number reducing quite dramatically, because most of those areas of the grievances that we have had came from that band and of course in other bands. But we've also worked on very aggressively on performance evaluations for the previous period, as I indicated previously, and that will show in our annual report. And as a result of that, some of the grievances would naturally fall away as a result. But others, of course, will continue to until closure by a grievance process that needs to close that. Then we move to issues of training. Now, in terms of how we've been training through Justice College, and Honorable House would recall that when we presented at one point or another before this Honorable House, we said because Justice College had been training the judiciary and all of us over the period, and when Sajay came in, there was a bit of a lull on both ends because it was unclear how this process was going to migrate. In the final analysis, when we settled Justice College, it was then clear that Justice College was going to train primarily the department on administrative issues that we wanted to improve on, and that has happened in a manner that we are comfortable with. Obviously, we could improve. And then on the other areas of law and for training court clerks, but on the core business of the department, their training has also evolved and been continuous. And they use train prosecutors, as the question was raised offline of the meeting. They are training prosecutors. They are training some people from the legal aid as well. But they're also training people from other countries on areas of law and the like. And we want to really develop this capacity a little more so that we can improve as the department and invest in our own training. At the end of December 2012, as I've indicated, Sajay was able to produce a number of 1,099 judiciary trainees. And then improved coordination of the JCPS cluster.
Just ask some clarity while the DD is on this point. 1,098, is that magistrate and that torture court?
It's the courses that have been offered, and sometimes people go to too much notice of the courses, and that does become a little bit of an issue. Okay. Anyway, I'm sorry, sir, I was looking for something specific on the ICE, on the criminal justice system modernization, but I'll get to it. The integrated justice system, which is the ICS in short, program remains a vital program for us in the modernization journey of the criminal justice system. The cluster has identified five integration priorities, which are packaged into three major program streams to ensure focused delivery. These priorities are around the implementation of case-related integration within the cluster, business intelligence capabilities within the cluster, as well as the management of persons within the criminal justice system, which refers to the identification and tracking of one of an individual throughout the criminal justice system. Secondly, the key achievements in relation to this have been, one, the conclusion of the pilot, which we reported on before this Honorable House at some point, of pilots of the various case-related integration between SAP, upgraded crime administration system, which is known as CAS, as well as the department's ICMS system. So that integration is already working. We piloted it. We in 20 courts supported by a number of police stations, I think 100 police stations, and we are now connected on the ICMS. In other words, information from SAPs, we are able to get it on real time in those identified courts. Okay, on real time in the identified courts that I can access to. We'll come to the detail. I'll provide the detail just now. Secondly, so that is happening, and it's work that we're excited about. And the ECMS in the NPA has also, remember we reported that in the NPA environment, they were also developing ECMS, and they were supposed to conclude it on the 31st of March 2013. That work has actually been concluded, and therefore the linkages are now able to happen. So in some areas of work, there's already a direct link between SAP and the NCE in terms of docket movement. So there is already in identified areas some connection that is live and it's happening. And then on and of course on the NPA side, remember that we did the pilot and then we had to go back and fix and clean out the system and so the aspects and such, but otherwise the system is now there. The creation of the OAS test, before I pass this issue, the legal aid there's something called legal aid notification process, where if somebody is arrested at SAP, the police is asked whether the person needs bail and all of that, and if the person says yes, they immediately log into the SAP system, and that notification goes to the legal aid live, and legal aid is able to pull it out and do whatever they need to do based on that. It's not throughout the country yet, but that's where we are moving to. No, it's not just the lonely, but it's fine. Let's accept that. Then the creation of an integrated framework for effective management of persons. This is a project that is going to be a very long-term project. But a lot of work has now gone into it. Where we are saying a person comes into the system so many times and we count that person differently. We would wish to count the person once and be able to identify and warn, for instance, correctional services if we are bringing in people of a particular nature, that this is a person of a particular nature, has these propensities, manage this person differently. We have not been able to do that because we do not have a system that will enable us to do that. So as a result, for instance, if this system is not aimed for awaiting trial detainees, they have a new name now, but that name refers to those people. Yes, I just can't remember. It has slipped my mind. is the right time for it. But what the cluster is trying to do is that if people come into the system, and let's say we are using the correctional facilities as the holding cells, and we are sending a whole lot of people into the holding cells, it's important for you to know who you are sending, because their behavior would be very different. There are those who had jumped bail before. There are those who had escaped before, and you don't want to not alert correctional services. And we've in fact in one or two incidences have become aware that sometimes by just shipping people as awaiting trial prisoners, you are also shipping people who are really, really dangerous, and you want to treat them somewhat differently from the normal people. The key achievements in this program include, again, I indicated piloting of the NPA, and so that I've already covered the integration. Now, insofar as the deployment of video alignment solution is concerned, that solution has been deployed. However, we've opted not to grow the project any further and to work in perfecting in the 47 magistrates' court, because we have discovered that even where there are opportunities to do a video arraignment, sometimes prosecutors do not do it, and we do not understand the reasons, and we are trying to understand the reasons at the stage so that we can then have a conversation that is informed by empirical data. But it is not in dispute. What we just don't understand is why it is not. Does it need to be compulsory? In other words, should we be saying for all of these things it is compulsory that you should use the video arraignment and no other option? Where the video arraignment works. And incidentally in the 47 court we do know it works, because it has been tested. There may be system problems from time to time. I'm not suggesting that there are no system problems. But it does work. And so we want to just perfect that model before we roll it out countrywide. Now on the modernization, you recall that we said there are systems that have to be implemented, and we are starting in high volume courts, and there are plenty of those high volume courts that we are going to roll out in 2018 and 2015. And those high volume courts, this is where the integration then is going to start from. But in other words, the current integration I've been speaking about is now going to go live, and we are at the deployment phase. Remember, we piloted, we improved, now we are at the deployment phase. So we are starting with the 20 courts, and these 20 courts are supported, in other words, are fed by at least about 100 police stations that support these courts. Now, there is something called a dashboard that has been developed. 9 of the KPIs are going to go live in 2014. In fact, they are delayed, and the reason why they are delayed is because we are finished with the testing of the 9 KPIs, but now we want to load real live data. In other words, if someone gets arrested and goes through the police, they must load real data than the testing data. And once they've loaded one or two rounds of real data, we should then be able to say the system works. If we would wish to then display to our authorities, just to ensure that they at least the 9 of the 28 KPIs work. Now, a dashboard is intended to achieve the following. We want to get to a position where we are able to see what is happening at court A in terms of volume. Are we able to move people to court B for whatever reason, and so on and so on. So at this stage, we're just talking between ourselves and SAP and NPE, departments that have not come, that have not been ready to be, for us to roll out this process, has been social development, who we meet very fundamentally in this process, as well as correctional services. But it's work in progress. It's not as if we're not engaging. They have had some challenges, capacity challenges, internally in their environment. This Honorable House had directed the Auditor General to audit the IJS program on what we had invested, the money that we had received over the period of time in, and whether there was real value for money that we achieved over that period. We have gone back, of course, we have engaged with the Auditor General. We've gone back, and I, as the cluster coordinator, wrote to all the issues we met, we planned, we did everything independent of the Auditor General. But we worked with our internal audit, or internal audit unit in the respective department. So that has happened. We met with the Auditor General, and they indicated what their plan was going to be in order for this audit to happen. And they indicated very categorically that for phase one, they are not going to be auditing value for money. They are going to be auditing the governance system from that period to now. Whether there were governance systems, whether these governance systems worked, if they didn't work, why did we take action, didn't we, and whatever else that they would like to see. We've made ourselves obviously available. We did request the Auditor General, at least in person, the Auditor General, that it would really be helpful that the audit of this program does not coincide with the broader audit, because then it's just going to send us into a tailspin. But we can, of course, tell the Auditor General how to do their work, and we hope they have understood, and they will come to the party. I really wanted to show honourable members just as So during 2013, 2014 financial year, as a result, we now shift our focus into just finalizing the regulation, which is done. We've consulted, we've done the regulations and all of that, but there are certain consultative processes before the regulation that are put, which are defined specifically, and we have to ensure that we achieve those processes. So as a result of these processes, the minister has written a lot of letters to his colleagues, the last of which is then saying, if I do not hear from you, I will take it that you are to the regulation. That's the only contract to be taken so that we can move to the next team, because we've been at this now for some time. With regard to community rehabilitation, we have discussed at length in our last appearance before this honorable house. It is important to indicate that work is ongoing under the leadership of Dr. De Beer. He's done the conversations and everything that needs to be done. We are meeting with a lot of resistance, I must indicate, a lot of resistance. And that resistance just goes to the criteria that we use to identify communities that are worthy of reparation and community rehabilitation. Having said that, we have adopted an approach which is not an arrogant approach, but which is an approach which says we need to get to a point where we close the issues of CRC. And insofar as we have to do certain things, we are going to do these things, and if there are challenges, we are going to meet these challenges head on at appropriate level where those challenges are. We are not saying it's not an opportunity. In fact, the impact of the delays in finalizing all the regulations is because we've been in conversation for the whole of last year, the whole of this year, trying to get everybody to move in unison and in tandem, and it's clearly not working. And the reason why it's not working is that the expectations are sitting at that level, the resources to meet the expectations are sitting at this level. And even if that was the resource was not a constraint issue, but still it would be near impossible that we would be able to compensate pretty much everybody within our current budget. We have had to go back to see in the CRC report and all the versions and the chapters to see whether in fact the compensations and the rehabilitations and all of these things were meant only as a, call it an ex gratia, as a token rather than a means for support. And our conclusion based on these reports are that they, in fact they were tokens more than a means of support. But however, the thing has now been turned on its head, and it's now seen as a one of the ways to generate income for those who are not able to generate income in addition to the social security net. We've engaged with our minister on the issue as well, because after much iteration between ourselves and the members of the various NGOs, it became clear that we were not making headway, and we received guidance, and we are acting in part on the basis of that guidance. Then, sorry, our colleague. All right, now we are on the service charter. The service charter is one of the areas that we've paid particular attention to, but most work on the service charter will happen in this current financial year, the one that has just started. And the reason for that is that in the previous year, we have had to do a lot of groundwork in preparing and understanding our services and understanding the targets and all of those things to be able to put all of that in the service charter, so which culminated obviously in the charter approved by the minister and the service standards also approved. We've done work to try and explain what the service charter and standards mean to the public, how the public should report posting some of those standards into all courts so that the public can say, this is my, the process I have to follow if I want to claim or if I want to raise an issue and all of those issues. And that is already in place. And where in some of the courts which I went to see and they still didn't have it, they're still going to be rolled out in the first 3 months of this financial year. That is the one aspect. But in the actual doing of the work to improve the service, we were very honored, for lack of a better word, in that the Public Service Commission undertook a study to do a survey on some of our courts to see whether our courts were performing as per expectation. And we were found wanting. And for us that has been a great benefit in one way, even though we were disappointed in another. In one way, the Public Service Commission did find that in some areas the staff was fine, the staff was courteous and all of those things, and they were satisfied in some areas. But there were areas, there were regions where they were really unhappy, and they expressed their unhappiness in the report that we received. I have since met with the Public Service Commission together with the minister, minister and myself. I can't remember. Met with the Public Service Commission. We took them through the interventions we were going to put in place. We gave them a full document on what we were doing at every court, and they were satisfied. And that document is going to be published together with their report. Our response will be published together with their report. I must indicate that the findings they found were the findings that we also found in doing our own assessments. And the assessments I had done in most regions, some of these findings were corroborated, or at least corroborated what I had already found as well. So this is now work in progress. Presidential hotline, if there was ever an area in the department that we are doing well in, is the presidential hotline. And it's not just receiving calls, it's dealing with, addressing, and concluding the calls that arise out of the presidential hotline. The team that does the presidential hotline is also the same team that does the service standard. And the reason why it's in the same environment is because we want to know that also the questions that are coming out of the presidential hotline are factored as part of areas of improvement in terms of the services that we must provide. So that brings us to the end of the administration component of this project. So thank you very much, Chair.
Gee, thank you very much. You've given us a... Yes. Very good. And we halfway? Are we halfway, Steve? Well, 1 out of 4, yes. Yeah. All right. Let's break for lunch, and can we reconvene at 2 p.m., please, 14 hours? Mr. Doctor? Doctor?
Too long.
Do you know if they're locking the venue? Not. Oh, silly. Stick around.